husband, father, Elmo impersonator?
Yeah!
He wrote The Arm and is currently writing its follow-up, The Leg. He has everyone's phone number, even yours. He's MLB insider Jeff Passan of ESPN, only on the program. Jeff Passan is brought to you by Kansas City's top-rated commercial roofing company, Easton Roofing, where integrity matters.
That's right. You can get a go on and request a free consultation online right now at EastonRoofing.com. A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, the only people I will trust on my roof, my family's roof. Go right now. You can check out the map link where they've done jobs all over the metro. That includes Lawrence and Topeka. Easton Roofing, getting you back to life, getting you back to business faster. Integrity matters. Find them online right now at EastonRoofing.com. Let's talk some baseball. Jeff Passan's got a busy week. On the short week, we're having to juggle some things around, but when we can get Jeff, we're going to take him. Jeff, you busy, busy man. How are you?
Busy. How are you, Sir Ed?
I'm not as busy as you. I'm all right. Things are good. Had a nice weekend. Got to see lots of friends and have folks over to the house a couple times. Go on a little bit of a couple hours of a pub crawl. Have a nice brunch over the weekend. I got almost nothing done, but I had a lot of good times with good people. So I'm not complaining.
I gotta say, I didn't take you to be a pub crawler.
There's a pub crawl that we've been going on for. First time I went on it would have been in 2004. It was their 25th anniversary. And they do it the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend every year. And so we could not miss. We only made it from about 12:30 to about, 12:30 to about 2. You know, and then we ducked out, but we wanted to make sure we were part of the big 25-year deal. So a lot of fun. A lot of fun, yeah. You like the pub crawl?
No, actually. I like the idea of a pub crawl.
Right.
But I'm also coming upon my 43rd birthday, and my body does not handle the pub crawl in the same way that it once did.
Yeah, this one, these guys, you know, back in the day were rip-roared and ready to rock.
No doubt.
You know, from like basically all the way from 85th and Warnell all the way to Brookside. And I don't think.
A lot of pubs.
There are a lot of them. And I don't think there used to be one family that would set up shop in their driveway as well. So there's like an additional one. And now they don't have the stamina that they used to. I don't know that they make it past 75th very often. But it is nice to know they've handed the tradition off. There's a second generation that is now on the pub crawls that is ready to apparently take the baton and carry this on for many years to come. So, you know, that's a piece of Americana right there.
Oh, absolutely. Nothing like passing on binge drinking to your children.
The legacy.
yes, you can either smile and laugh, or you can cry. There's really no in between.
They pull one of your kids out of a bar, hammered.
I might do both.
Yes.
they pull one of your kids out of a bar, just hammered. My gosh. Well, he's a legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
I'm not at the point yet where either of my kids is old enough to drink, but I feel like it's going to be weird. When I'm having a drink with my child, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I guess that's just that becomes a normal thing as they get older. But right now, it's like no, this is wrong.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. Those seem like strange days ahead in my mind as well.
When I was a child, my dad, his beer of choice had funny sayings on the caps, and I always got a kick out of those. Unbeknownst to them, I took those caps in to show and tell. I was in the third grade.
Sweet.
They were a touch concerned.
Wait, hold on. What beer had funnies on the caps?
Red Dog.
What the hell is Red Dog? I've never even heard of that.
Your dad liked to drink.
Yeah, I remember that.
Red Dog was the beer that my father could afford when I was a child.
had the two dogs in the commercial, and the one big dog was was always a little, hey, like Spike was his little buddy, Red Dog. And he would like,
no.
He was, you remember that? I remember the commercials. I got nothing.
Can't help you on that one.
I actually, Curtis, I do remember it too, because I remember trying to get my voice as deep as yours and just going, Red Dog.
Red Dog.
Like that. Yep.
That's fantastic. I'll have to go look up the commercials. All right. Let me ask you a question. The Royals are getting a perfect game through seven innings, one inning by Josh Staumont, one inning by Mike Myers. And so it's a perfect game. So he's now, Myers is going to see the lineup for the third time entering the eighth inning. And then, of course, because it's a perfect game, it'll be the cleanup hitter that he's seeing. Where was the right time to change pitchers?
I mean, theoretically, it was there, but I don't know. I was not as excited as others were about the combined nature. There's never been a combined perfect game, by the way, so that would have been the first.
That would have been great to be the first for a team that's been ridiculed for not being able to pitch, been ridiculed for not being able to field. I think it would have been quite the jewel in their crown, something to really build upon.
I think the jewel in their crown, yes. Something to build upon, no. It's one game out of 162. It doesn't take away the previous, how many, 50 that they've been playing 300 baseball. Like, it's. I don't think a perfect game, a combined perfect game, is going to jumpstart the Royals towards something more. Because I think if you look at Mike Myers, who threw six really good, in fact, perfect innings at one point yesterday, do you really think Mike Myers is going to be on this team next year, Seren?
No, I don't, and I really don't think he's ever going to be in this position again, and so that's why when you're six outs away, let's go ahead and go for it.
You want it to be aggressive at that point rather than hand to the, you know, the guy who's been getting all these outs and whose stuff had not. And by the way, I don't disagree with you, but I'm if I'm putting myself in Matt Pichardo's shoes right now, I don't mind riding the guy who got the vast majority of the outs in this perfect game and seeing how far he can take it.
Trust me, there's no venom in my voice whatsoever towards Matt Cotrero. There's not, because I also think that I'm not so sure that my edict, if I were J.J. Piccolo, wouldn't be shine my bullpen pieces up as much as you can, because we're going to flip them. And so what makes bullpens look good? Not being overworked. And so if the edict has been make sure they look as good as possible, then I'm all for it. Then you're just carrying out what is the bigger picture of how we make this club better. I'm not upset, but I do like, listen, there's so few times that I can analyze a baseball game the way you get to when you're covering a team that's in contention. Who gives a flying crap what reliever he brought in, who we pinch hit for? It's frankly all lost. I was thrilled to have a game that there was some significance to the moves that were being made and be able to get to analyze the game. And you know what I got?
Yeah, remember when we used to talk about like Ned Yost bringing in relievers at particular times and criticizing him or praising him for those moves?
Yes.
And watching him in real time sort of evolve his bullpen maneuvering and talking about that because the games mattered.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how this feels to me, right? Is like, okay, I got a chance to do that, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to embrace it. And immediately, you know, there are people like, you complain when that the bullpen's overworked. There's no complaining. I'm just pointing out the different options that were here. And then I also played his comments about it. And I was surprised he wasn't pressed a little bit harder by either the TV people or the beat folks about, like, hey, I mean, third time through the lineup, like, that's not new news, right? And his comment was like, yeah, when we got some runs, it made it easier to stay with him. Which, so basically, if I were to interpret that, it wasn't important at all to us. Like, it was more about saving the bullpen moving forward, which is fine.
Well,
I just wanted to learn how to read what the man is thinking so I can apply it to what he does in moves in the future.
I mean, Barlow was down, right?
I'll look at his usage.
Barlow had pitched his previous two games. you're probably not going to send him out there a third consecutive day. Probably not.
That's correct. Barlow was out, had been 10-17, so you don't want to go third. So no Barlow.
Yep. Chapman had pitched the previous day and I believe gave up three base runners in the process. So Chapman's probably, if not down, you would prefer not to use Chapman at that point. Beyond that, Seren, is there a single relief pitcher on the Kansas City Royals roster who you would trust more than the way that Mike Myers was pitching yesterday through those first 18 hits?
Yes, any of them. Literally any of them. Yeah. I mean, not any of them, but Amir Garrett, the guys, out of the guys that were available, Taylor Clark and Amir Garrett. Yes, because the third time, because it's Mike Myers, right? What about Mike Myers in his history says this guy's going to deal for a third inning on a time when he's only struck out three through six innings? It wasn't like he was blowing people away.
So I think this is your answer, that if you are looking to preserve a perfect game, right, because that's the goal here. That's what we're aiming for. The Royals relievers this year, they all strike a lot of guys out. Like, they have definitely embraced the punch out. But I'm also going to read you the walk rates of these guys. And remember, we are looking to preserve a perfect game, which means no walks. Josh Taylor, 4.3 per nine. Scott Barlow, who was out. So it's Jose Quas, 3.4. Hernandez probably wasn't pitching. Stamont was down. Taylor Clark, 3.4. Amir Garrett, 7.3. Like, it's not like there's a whole lot of guys in that bullpen who are going to be a whole lot better at protecting this perfect game. I totally see your point, especially third time through. But, you know, it's not like we got HDH back there now. You know, this is not a repeat of the mid-2010s Kansas City Royals bullpen. And I think you've got just as good or bad, incidentally, a chance of keeping the perfect game going with relievers as you do sticking with the guy who got you there.
Well, Taylor Clark and Amir Garrett were perfect in their two innings. You could have just gone to them two batters earlier, couldn't you? I mean, it's reverse engineering, but when I say, well, who would you have put in that spot? I mean,
they would have had to have gotten Nolan Arenado,
who
was, you know, a tough customer, obviously, as we know. But they I do think the better move would have been to get him out of there, for sure. Your point about the walk rate is a very good one. You know, they just didn't happen to do it that day. But like, I don't. When's that opportunity going to be sitting there for you? But
never.
But again,
never.
I have no anger.
That is never going to happen again. And I don't know. I've you know, my feelings on combined anything. I've made this comparison on Twitter before. I feel like a combined no hitter is like a boneless chicken wing. It's just a mediocre version of the real thing.
Objection.
Boneless chicken wings are pretty good.
They're fantastic. They're nuggets without having to shovel it all over your face to get it in. There's nothing wrong with a boneless chicken wing.
You know what a boneless chicken wing is, Seren?
It's a chicken nugget chicken with nugget. All the goodness of the chicken wing without the negativity of having to pull the gristle and the fat and whatever.
No, Seren, boneless wings are not the wing parts. They're chicken breast.
Which is fine.
Just say you like nuggets, then.
I love nuggets. Yes.
Okay, that's great. I love nuggets, too. I'm just not part of the... not part of the racket that calls them boneless wings when they're not wings.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Just call it, nuggets with wing sauce. Fine. Yeah, if that makes you feel better, but I will not. There is the combined no hitter being the improved version of said concoction.
Hold on a second. You've lived in Kansas City for how long?
Most of my life, almost all of it, 3 years in Vegas, 4 years in Syracuse.
Right. You realize, like, the best chicken wings in the world are at a restaurant here. And I don't know if they're a sponsor or not of this show, so I'm not going to put it out there. But the best wings, I've lived in Buffalo, the best wings in the world are here. You no. have to like those wings.
The best wings are in Syracuse, New York.
Oh, Petra, what are we going
to
do with you?
I can't believe you won't champion that being a Syracuse guy.
They're just not. I am a Syracuse guy. But
where did you get your wings when you were there?
Cosmos.
Well, the Cosmos says chicken wings. Cosmos says pizza, not chicken wings. So you never went to Sal's Birdland?
No, honestly, I did not go to Sal's Birdland.
Well, then you're missing out. The best wings, Sal's Birdland. They have the best wings, for sure. All right, let me ask you this then.
And that is completely subjective or objective assessment. It is correct.
Yeah, it is. It is
everyone,
fact.
At least in this time, everyone who has an opinion on food, that's it. That's the best.
Yeah. Jeff Passan is with us, wing eater, baseball insider from ESPN.
Nugget hater.
All right. That being said, the Royals' run differential in the month of May is only -5. -64 in April. The schedule is way more difficult. So you would, in April it was. So you'd expect it to be better. They're one of those weird things where they, should be a lot better than they've been record wise in the month of May. But are we seeing real progress? Like everybody, I took calls to start. And everyone's wanting to fire JJ Piccolo. And I'm like, well, which is ridiculous. You gave the man the job. Now he needs time to try to do it and get his fingerprints on whatever he wants to change. But, I mean, is everybody missing the point? There is real tangible progress being made on his watch.
They're hitting. And that's the exciting part. Salvador Perez had a monster May.
Future Hall of Famer Salvador Perez.
Salvador Perez had a monster May. Michael Massey actually had a really good May. And I don't know that he's locking down the second base job necessarily, but he was good. Nick Prado has... I like Nick Prado, by the way, in the leadoff spot.
Me too.
I like what they're doing with the lineup. I like the fact that Bobby Witt is... I see Bobby Witt, the player that he is right now, being more of like a cleanup guy than he is somebody who you're going to bat in the one or two hole. And part of me wishes Prado were right-handed so you could do a Prado Pasquantino 1-2. You probably don't want to stack those lefties on top of each other. And Salvador Perez is also more of like a 4-5 guy just because of the on-base stuff. But at least they're manipulating the top of that lineup and trying to get guys who get on base. And that's, this month, that's what guys have done. Like, the offensive players have been pretty good. MJ Melendez has been solid. Their strikeout rate's gone down. Like, there are little rays of sunshine that we've seen in May. But, run differential, Seren, for as much I talk about it, doesn't mean a damn thing if you can't win ball games.
That's right. But the run differential over the short haul is a better indicator of future success than the win-loss record is.
Correct. Yes. Theoretically. If you can keep up the run differential. Absolutely.
See the Pirates when they were 20-9. And you're
20-9 with an even run differential.
You're like, something. Yep. There's a correction. Now, maybe, we saw him completely tanking, but that was a good indication.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Listen, Tom called earlier, Tom from Cleveland, and he said he lived in Missouri and he's a Royals fan. And then he said, you people, meaning me, along with all the others, thinking Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be something and how soft we are. They got to fire. He was one of the guys. Got to fire J.J. Piccolo. And this town is just way too soft on this ball club. And I will entertain that because I do remember in 14 what I believe kicked this club in the ass is that they were trying to run out. Ned, they were 500 after the All-Star break, and they wanted Ned Yost and Dayton Moore, and they were starting to boo at the ballpark, and all of a sudden that team turned the corner. It had been long enough. Everybody had plenty of at-bats and innings to start being good, and they took off. Coincidence? Certainly could be. But I do think there's something to be said for having some expectations and jumping on some people. Is Kansas City too nice a town to its ball club?
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's what I like about it.
I know. That's the problem.
Yeah. Like, what's the guy's name who calls
Tom.
In to complain?
Tom in Cleveland.
Wait, Tom is from Cleveland?
He's from Cleveland, but he's a Royals fan, so he listens to the show from Cleveland on the app.
But Tom is from Cleveland. I would love to know what Tom does for a living. And I would love to know what Tom's productivity is. And I would love to stay on Tom. And if Tom is having a down week, I would love to call his office and tell him just how terrible he's doing and how he should be fired because he's not living up to expectations. Like, that's the thing to me about, like, it's so easy to be a sports fan who wants everyone fired. Being a sports fan who's reasonable and rational and has fair expectations and doesn't want to fire somebody because over a 5-game period their team is playing terrible, or even over a 50-game period their team is playing terrible, those are the kind of sports fans that I'm interested
well,
in.
Well, I'm amazed at how, like there just is, like, a guy will be, you know, if it's a guy that's been, like I'm amazed at, like, when I question, hey, let's try to talk about what Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be. I'm not sure he's going to be a star. And I get hit with people like, you're a dumbass. He's a star. And
George Brett struggled his first couple of years.
Which was actually about five minutes
really.
That George Brett struggled. But anyway, you know, and they all lose it. And I watch at the ballpark and a guy, you know, if it's one of their guys and Bobby Witt's one of their guys because they've decided or they told their buddies that he's going to be great. So they're all in on him and he can do no wrong, and how they'll be like, hey, yay, Bobby, you know, as he's coming off the field, you know, in the midst of, you know, the last 10 days batting a buck with a buck on base and a 200 slug, like, you know, in Philadelphia, that's not how they react. In New York, that's not how they react. And I'm just, like, it's okay to boo the, like, everyone in this town just wait. Carl Peterson is, like, their guy. They loved it. They had one guy that they could MF all day and all night, and everybody around the bar would jump in with him, and that was it. That was the only problem with the Chiefs not winning. And that's what they've decided. They want to smoochy all their players. They're not about to boo anybody out there, right? Which I'm with you. I kind of like. But boy, the general manager, that's where the buck stops. And if that guy's been on the job more than 10 minutes, he's the problem. We know JJ's a unique situation because he's been here for a long time before finally ascending to the guy who actually calls the shots. But I do think this town could use a little more. It's okay to boo a team that is playing like crap.
I guess. maybe it's because I'm just not a fan of the team, which I'm not. I'm not a fan of any of these teams. I cover them, you know?
Right.
I like to see the Royals do well, because when the Royals do well, my kid, who is a fan of the team, likes that. And my friends who are fans of the team like that. And the city of Kansas City, in which I live, tends to be more energized and wants to talk about baseball and love baseball. All that. I just don't know that booing guys on the field is going to make all that big a difference.
I saw Angel Berroa kicking the ball all over the place. He, in his rookie of the year season, had like 20 errors on like, I think that was the number, whatever it was, on like May something, and he got booed. They jumped him, they booed him, and he was in the, and we asked him afterwards, hey, how to feel this and that, and all of a sudden, he played great defense the rest of the way and won Rookie of the Year. Like, I think it can send a message and make an impression upon a player.
I guess so. I'm not a booer.
Not a booer.
Sorry. You know,
Jeff
Passan,
not a booer.
I will boo boneless wings. That's what I'll boo.
I want to go to eat, and then when the menu's there and it says boneless wings, I want people to go around. Oh, Curtis is going to have this. Adam's going to have this. Seren's going to have this. We get to Jeff. First of all, I'm noticing right here you got the boneless wings. Oh, yeah. Boo.
Here's the thing. You would order the boneless wings. And
then you would boo me?
Absolutely. Anyone who's ordering boneless wings and calls them boneless wings instead of better branded chicken nuggets, I'm going to boo you.
He would stand in the restaurant and point to you. Boo this man.
Stop booing them. He's six years old.
A number of royals who would order boneless wings, I would boo the crap out of that.
Would you boo a seven-year-old child who ordered boneless wings?
Yeah, I probably would.
You'd boo his parents.
Boo to you, Dad, Mom, for raising this heathen.
How do you live with yourself?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Is the National League just suck when there's only, yes. I heard Todd Lebo point this out, six teams with a positive run differential? Does it just blow over there in the NL?
Not just that, like, the Marlins are in second place with the second worst run differential. I mean, how many teams in the NL do you guys look at and say this team could win the World Series? Right now, for me, it's two. The Braves and the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Nothing in the Central. Mets don't look like it. Phillies don't look like it. Marlins certainly aren't it.
You don't think the Cardinals could find themselves?
No, I do not think the Cardinals are going to find themselves now. But that's how bad the Central is. I was talking with the GM in the Central earlier today, and I said to him, who wins your tire fire of the division? And he was like, Milwaukee or St. Louis? Like, he wasn't sure. Like, that's just such a – as bad as the AL Central is, the NL Central's not far behind.
So I think the Cardinals are going to right the ship and – I think they'll still be the team that wins. That
I mean, Duran, we're almost 60 games into the season, and they stink. Like, if you watch them, they stink.
Yeah, I still think the components are there. I'm not sure why they're not playing better, but it's just, you know, teams go through their stretches. They just seems to be at the front. Like, where do you think they're going to finish if they're not going to finish at the top? Where do you have them finishing in the Central?
Probably middle of the pack. Maybe second. I think the Brewers are better. So I could see them finishing second. I could see Pittsburgh hanging around. Cubs think the Reds are actually very interesting. The Reds are a very interesting team right now because they've got some young pitching. I don't know if you've seen Matt McClain. Matt McClain can play. Ellie De La Cruz is going to be up soon, and he's got like some O'Neill Cruz vibes to him, except better. Switch hitter, hit the ball 115-plus a lot. Cincinnati's doing its rebuild well, and they have a ton of money to spend, or rather they don't have a ton of money on their payroll. And it'll be very interesting to see if Bob Castellini actually turns around and goes and gets some free agents, because the core that they've got there right now is better than what the Royals got.
Explain to me, Hosmer being DFA'd by the Cubs, explain to me how that career went as far south as it went.
The Padres paid way more for him than anybody should have because he was a low slug first baseman who probably was not going to age particularly well. So I think the story of Eric Hosmer was that frankly, he got a really great contract for him, and that he was looked at through the lens of that contract rather than who he was as a player. And Eric Hosmer will be a Royals Hall of Famer, as he should be, because he was an enormous part of the team that won the World Series in 2015, and you can never take that away. But he was also a guy who, at his best, was a very good first baseman, but never great. And when you got a guy going into his 30s who really didn't hit for a ton of power at a must-have power position, you can't give him $20 million a year. I don't care how good of a leader he is, which is what the Padres wanted from him. He's not going to be worth that.
His OPS plus that year that they signed him coming off of was 133.
Yeah.
I mean, at 27, he goes 318, 385, 498. You're planning on that kind of being the norm for a few years before the decline comes.
I don't know. Are you? Because in the years before that, he never slugged 500. right?
$4.98 that last year was his highest, yes.
Yeah. He was, I mean, he was, you know, he, that's fair. He was coming off a good year, and he was young. And he would get you 25 homers and 100 RBIs. But there, you know, if you looked at the batted ball profile, there was always too much on the ground. And maybe the Padres were banking on being able to get more of a launch angle into his swing, but that just never happened. And so he was always more a gap-to-gap guy. Bat slows down, strikeouts go up, power goes away, and, you know, at 33, he may well be done. And, hey, if that is the case, Eric Hosmer had a very good Major League Baseball career. He had 200 home runs, made an All-Star team, won some Gold Gloves, won a World Series. Like, that's a really good career that he should be very proud of.
I just figured, like, with the release from the Padres, he'd overhaul the swing and say, okay, I've got to get some lift. And would break it down. Maybe that'll happen now, and we'll see if he has a Joey Votto rebirth or a J.D. Martinez turn the corner. I keep waiting for that to happen because I actually think he's a pretty good athlete. I object to the not good athlete part. For a first baseman, I think he's actually a pretty good athlete.
Did I say he's not a good athlete?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you did. It's part of your...
I said he's not a good athlete. Eric Hosmer was like a pitcher throwing 98 as like when he was coming up.
That's why I was surprised to hear you say it.
I don't. Can we roll the tape?
Yeah, we'll roll it back. We can't do it till the break, but we'll do it during the break. We'll find out. We'll find out. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I thought I heard.
Totally recant that if I said it, but don't think I would ever say that about it.
Okay. Let's get to our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. It's summertime. That means you can enroll your child in summer sports performance training right now. The Sports Medicine and Performance Center is perfect for use, whether it's high school, college athletes. They've even got ladies-specific sports. Have your athlete in midseason form when the fall sports roll around. Find out more details at kansashealthsystem.com/sports-performance. I'll start you with this. What kind of sauce do you prefer your wings cooked in? Are you like pure buffalo? Do you have buffalo?
Give me spicy.
Yeah, spicy buffalo sauce. Yeah, with you 100%. Tell me, what will Hosmer's career home run total be? It's 198 right now.
You know what? I want to be positive and say he's going to make a comeback and do great. So I'm going to say 250, just because get me feeling all like guilty now for saying something I don't think I said.
Okay. Good to know. Ranch or blue cheese? What are you dipping it in?
Oh, blue cheese all day.
Oh wow, that's a mistake right there.
All right. It was clear that you don't know what you're talking about with your love of boneless wings. So I absolutely, obviously would have pegged you for a ranch.
Well, I think you love boneless wings too. Your whole rub is simply that's the nameplate they've been given.
Yeah, that's part of it, but it's also the fact that you would take them over actual wings.
Yeah, I order the actual wings because it's a little less fat content usually. And being on a perpetual lifelong diet, I deprive myself of the things I really want, which would be the boneless wings. But I digress. All right. And finally, what Hall of Fame ballot does Greinke go in on? First, second, third, fourth, fifth?
First? Yep.
There it is. Glad to hear it. You're the man, Passon. We'll talk to you next week on whatever day you deem possible to come speak to us.
I'll figure that out when I figure it out. See you, boys.
There he goes. Our MLB insider, Jeff Passon, does a fantastic job. Breaking it all down, he's brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Online at eastonroofing.com. Joe Spiker and his team, the only folks that'll be on my roof, on my mom's roof, happy to do repairs. Multiple lenders, so if you need to finance a new roof, they can take care of that as well. Founded on integrity, that's Easton Roofing. Whether it's your home or your business, if you're a property manager, rest easy. You can have them out, get a free inspection, a free estimate on any work that needs to be done. It's at Easton Roofing. Find them online at eastonroofing.com.
All right, the good sense. End of the hour answer. Denver Nuggets, fourth team to reach the finals and never face a team with a .550 winning percentage. Who's the last team to do it before them?
They're the.
This is kind of amazing.
Were they, wait, give it to me again?
The fourth team ever to get to the NBA Finals and not face a team with a 550 or better winning percentage. So they got what I would call the KU road to the finals.
What about the Thunder in 12?
It goes back a little ways.
Does it? Okay. I just know they played an 8 in the second round.
It goes back a long ways.
Oh, I have no idea then.
The 1959 Boston Celtics. And they didn't play four rounds back then. The other three teams are the 56 Warriors, 57 Celtics, or I'm sorry, 56 Warriors, yeah, 57 Celtics, and 59 Celtics. Three times in a four-year span it happened. It had not happened since.
So basically the Celtics are a fraud.
Back then. But it's also they only had to play a couple of rounds.
If I'm reading you right.
I think so. The unprecedented in modern NBA history, a team four rounds, they will not play a team 550 or better. So the Nuggets better win this one because the path's never going to have been better, as I guess would be the, I guess the upshot of that.
That's the moral of the story.
Yes. They will not have an easier situation to win an NBA championship than they do right now.
We asked the question on our Joslyn's Jewelry program poll. Mm-hmm. What's your description of the Celtics? And by the way, we were playing for Good Sense right there. GoodSenseSubs.com. You can get that on your way home. Put the order in right now. You can put it in ASAP. It'll be ready in about 20 minutes. That's about, I think, the timeline usually. Or you can just pick your time. If you know you're going to be by there at 6, 6:30, put that time in there. They'll have it ready for you to go. You can grab it and go. Pay right there online. Locally owned and operated, founded in Lenexa, Kansas. That's your Good Sense. Great sandwich. Which is tonight are yours. Just go to Good Sense. We put the poll question out there as to was it more about the Celtics' failure or more about the Heat's brilliance? Almost 6,000 votes, 70% right now saying Celtics' failure.
Well, the number was almost 2 hours ago, so it's been pretty consistent, 70-30. I would not put that as my percentage of Celtics or Heat, and that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what the overall feeling is. That most people think it was the Celtics, but what by what percentage is a different question. I would put it 60-40 Boston of last night. That may be,
is it always the team that lost blew it?
No. I think the reason why I put it
did they
put it that,
want it more?
Could be. I think it was more about the way Boston came out. Once they got up 5-0, that was like the only time that Miami faced any kind of adversity last night where you thought, let's see if how do they bounce back from Game 6? You know, the Royals and Cardinals in 85 was a different sport. It was 40 years ago. But part of what happened in Game 7 seemed to be the way Game 6 ended that year. Well, how much of an impact would that be in Game 7 of this series? And for about 2 minutes, it seemed like it might have a little bit. But the minute the Miami Heat answered the call, Boston seemed, it felt to me like they thought, oh, damn, we're going to have to play 48 minutes against these guys. We thought we could come out and blitz them early and they'd fall out of it. Because that's what's to some degree what their pattern had been in the three games that Boston won. And they didn't. So, and I think they did not respond well to that situation. And the fact that they decided, you know, yes, they hit the second most threes per game in the NBA this year, only behind Golden State and Boston.
Yeah.
But at some point, you've got to change what you're doing. And they did not change. 0 for 12. They're 0 for 11 in the first quarter. They missed their first three-point attempt in the second quarter. And they never really seemed to adjust what they did last night. And I think that allowed Miami to find their footing early on. And once they got their footing and got ahead, it was. I kind of felt like Boston's in trouble. They missed their opportunity to put them out early, and I give Miami credit. Sure, that's why I don't. It's not 70-30, maybe 55-45. But I do think it was immeasurably more what Boston did, and than what Miami did. I think Miami just took advantage of it, and once they got going, they just. I think Boston completely fell apart.
I think that's some of the things we've talked about, like the 3-point. Yeah. Live by the three, die by the three.
Yeah,
that is part of it. But I think Joe Mazzulla should be fired. I don't think he's a good coach.
No.
And
they look like a team that didn't have a good coach last night.
I think this series was lost when he blew game one.
Yeah.
obviously, because yep. they win game one, right, which right. they were leading coming down the stretch, and then right. somehow got outscored, was like 13-2 or 13-0 mm-hmm. or something.
Game six was pretty similar to game one. It just happened to be they got that tip in at the end.
Game yeah. six, it was 12-2 before the game-winning shot.
Yeah. I mean, like close games, games decided by single digits. What was he? What did we say he was?
In this series or in the playoffs as a whole?
The playoffs as a whole in this series.
In this series, the Celtics were 1-2, yeah.
And games decided by single digits. And games decided by single digits, Spoelstra 7-3. Oh, no, he was 6-2. I'm sorry. 7-3 is Mike Malone.
Yeah.
Like, coaching matters.
Yes. Right. And that's one of the step ups that Miami's going to have to play. One, Denver, I mean, talent wise, I mean, Boston's as good as Denver, but Denver is a very talented team playing at the top of their game, and they're not going to fall apart. Denver's not going to crap a game away to you like Boston did. So the Heat are really going to have to be on their game. They're rested. They're more rested, but I mean, I don't know how much more is rested. They're getting a couple days off before they play anyway, but.
Right. Is the NBA in just a cycle where their best players are all aging and on the downslope of their career, and they're missing a wave of young talent to come take it over? Right? Like, you know,
could be.
Because, like, you know, the Celtics, I mean, you know, what a disaster. They flopped to the Heat. They won 57 games.
Yeah.
Not 66, not yeah. 62.
Yeah, right. There was, you know, no great.
All the Nuggets,
year.
Like, I mean, you're going up against a one seed now. 53-29, not 63-19.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how much of it is just like we're in an era where, as much as we feel like it's these super teams, actually the attempt to create a super team is putting together a bunch of aging stars.
Right.
That is actually bad roster construction.
I can see that.
Which is actually balancing it out, because neither one of these teams are quote unquote super teams,
right? And the team, the last team that kind of had that those kind of numbers was the first 2 years of Golden State. That was before they got Kevin Durant. That was Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, and they went 67-15 and then 73-9. So I think there probably is something to that.
I think the super team, we like to talk about bricks and mortar. Building a super team right now in the NBA, it feels like it gets you to the point where the bricks are not as strong as you thought they were, and it leaves you handicapped of getting any worthwhile mortar. So if you can't afford yeah. mortar, the bricks better be freaking outstanding. And now the bricks are maybe overpaid and old.
Which team hits more threes? Is that what determines who wins? We'll talk about that next here in the program. Talking NBA Finals here in the program.
Mm-hmm.
How important is the three-pointer? Seren Petro, Curtis Siebold. Adam Dravetta with you. Nuggets are a huge favorite. In fact, if you look at the odds, basically the favorite is that it's going to be Nuggets in five.
Yeah.
Who you got?
Nuggets in five.
Do you really?
Yeah, with the 2-2-1-1-1. I might say Nuggets in six if they're playing three straight, but Miami's actually a bit better on the road than at home, I think, to some degree in the postseason. But I just don't think the Heat's going to be able to find what they could find against other teams. I don't think the Nuggets right now really seem to have any weakness. They're as talented as Miami, and they're as close to being as good, as well coached as a team they've played this year.
I think Miami showed enough scrappiness, if you want to call it that, to make me say six, but I'll go Nuggets in six. But my first instinct was five, but I'll just, you know, the Lakers, if they were capable of taking them to six, I think the Heat can too. But I still think the Nuggets.
Nuggets in five, you're saying?
I'm going six.
Nuggets in six. Let's see. Heat lost to the Nuggets 112-108 at home. And that was back on February 13th. I'm trying to find the other game. Where's the other one? And the Heat lost to the Nuggets 124-119 at Denver.
So you played them close.
Yeah, both times. I have to look and see what they were at full strength. I'm kind of thinking Nuggets and six.
Yeah, I think we might end up at the end of, well, just the way that they're going to play supposedly seven games in 18 days. It starts on the first game seven, is set for June 18th, because, of course, you got to take 2 weeks to play the finals. But when it's done, I think there's a good chance we look back and think, How good was this Nuggets run through the playoffs? Because they've been really, really good.
The three-pointer will be what determines it. Brian Windhorst said whoever hits more threes is going to win. That's what he said about the Heat and Celtics. The Nuggets, when out-threeing their opponents, if they get three threes or more, if they out-three-point their opponent by three or more, they are 9-0. They have not lost when they out-three them by three or better. Yeah. Below that, they still come in at 3-3, though.
Yeah.
Winning a game even minus six on the threes. Miami Heat, when out-threeing their opponents at all, are 7-2.
Yeah.
By three or more, that number goes to 6-1.
Yep.
So at even strength, they're 1-1. Below, if they lose out on the threes, they're 3-3. Although I will point out they won -1, -1, -3, and lost -7, -9, -10, which makes sense, right? Yeah. This is a point thing, not a rebound thing. It's a direct correlation to scoring,
yes.
Which is still how we determine the champion or how we determine the winner of the game. But it is amazing how much the three will determine who goes further. And as far as three-pointers made, is one team more reliant? The Heat are more reliant on it than the Nuggets.
Seem to be.
So this will be a bit of an interesting contrast.
Yeah, but 11-0 when they out-three their opponents, the Nuggets, in the postseason.
Bam Adebayo would seem to be, you know, a nice athletic piece to be able to put on Jokic, but like, no one seems
he's
to be
so
a good.
Good at finding. Yeah. I mean, he might not go for 36, but I could see 24, 13, and 12.
How low will the ratings be on this series? Do we agree they're going to be low?
Yes. Yes, I do. But it'll be, I think they'll be. To this point, the ratings have been very good. Higher than a lot of recent seasons. But I do think they're going to get of a hit. I don't think these finals are going to rate well compared to Golden State and Boston a year ago. I think this will probably end up being the lowest rated finals maybe a decade.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look where be a San Antonio.
Probably, like something along that line. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is the lowest rated finals in 10 years.
So you think the Nuggets easy.
I do.
He and I got the Nuggets by six.
Yeah.
Nuggets in six in this one. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting.
It's the best coach team Miami's played all year in the playoffs. I think the best coach team they've played.
Well,
the team that makes the fewest mistakes. They just seem to do everything well. They got guys who can shut down. They got some good individual defenders. Everyone can shoot the three, and Jokic is just ridiculous.
What did the Knicks botch against the Heat?
Well, I mean, they didn't botch anything, but
Mike Malone, the Nuggets haven't really been tested, and I can't remember
years. We did the stat, and nobody haven't played a 550 team yet.
Yeah, and
play one this week either.
And he's been great in close games, so he's done his part. Yeah, it's an interesting time. I like the comparisons to the 1970s NBA where it seemingly you had a different champion. We're going to have a different champion for, what, the sixth straight year? Mm-hmm. Fifth or sixth? Sixth straight year. Yep. So,
it's a very compelling series. Yeah. I don't think a lot of people will be watching.
Well, and I think it's a reason to want basketball in Kansas City.
Yes.
At least right now it appears the NBA is much more wide open than it's been. I'll give you the things you need to know. Talk college football with Chip Patterson next.
All right, Jaylen Brown, the fifth player to have 8 turnovers in a Game 7. Name any of the other 4. Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.